Welcome to the World Athletics Podcast. This is a special episode celebrating women in athletics. I'm your host, Joanna Hayes. My special guests are Gail Devers, Sally Pearson, and Dervo O'Rourke. Let's start with Gail Devers. Gail is a 1992 and 1996 Olympic champion in the 100-meter flat. She's the 1993 and 1995 world champion in the 100-meter hurdles. In 1993, she also won the 100-meter flat. She's a 2003 world indoor champion in the 60-meter hurdles and the 1997 and 2004 world indoor champion in the 60-meter flats. Gail, that's a lot of running. Gail, you are like just so amazing and so dynamic over the hurdles and over the flat races. I mean, your legacy is just amazing. And I really wanted to ask you because, you know, we look at the 60 and the 100 as just full on, all out sprinting. And then the hurdles, it's full speed, but you have to attack the barriers and maybe find a rhythm. So I'm just wondering, how do you go into each race? Do you change your mindset or what do you do in preparation for the two different events?
Okay. Well, first of all, your introduction made me feel really, really old. So I'll start there. No, that's a good question because like you said, there is a difference. I mean, hurdlers usually think of running in rhythm and then sprinters, you think it's all out. And how do you negotiate that? For me personally, I've always said that I'm a sprinter. And I just happen to have to go over obstacles. And what I want to do is whatever my best 100 or my best 60 meter flat is, that's what I'm trying to do in the hurdles. And I'm just trying to execute it at a faster rate. If I think of running a rhythm race and I'm running in rhythm and I think I'm running like everybody else and I want to distinguish myself as how do I separate myself from the bunch? And the only way I can do that is to be a sprinter.
That's right. You're on the ground more than you're in the air.
Absolutely.
So hopefully. You have to get out of the air. Hopefully.
Well, I don't know because on the ground for me could be a fall, but you didn't hear that.
Your feet are on the ground. Just the feet. But yeah, you know, they call it sprint hurdles, right? You are a sprinter and you are reacting to those hurdles and you better react quick, especially with that speed that you bring into those hurdles. So watching you be able to do that is amazing. And I may go off script here a little because I don't know for sure, but I feel like you've got to be the fastest doubler of all time.
That's what somebody told me.
Check that later.
they told me that fastest sprinter hurdler combination. Yeah. So
because you're 10.82.
Yes.
Yeah. So look at me.
Look at you. Hey.
10.82, 12.33, 12.28 with the wind. We're not sure if there was real wind there or not. Right. That may not have really been windy. We're not positive.
I like that.
Dervil. You are a three-time Olympian for Ireland and the 2006 60-meter hurdles indoor champion. Now, I really need to ask you about that race because that was a very close race, right? And as we were joking earlier with those hurdles, they don't move out of the way. They don't adjust for you. You have to adjust and clear them. So when you're in a race that tight and there's people on your left and right and they're running next to you, you can't make a quick move of like, let me go quick so they don't beat me. How did you maintain your composure to dominate and win that race? Because you were really in the lead from start to finish, but I mean, they were right there.
Yeah, that's actually an amazing question, Joanna, because you so understand the event. I don't think anybody has ever asked me a question that's so on point for the event before, because I'm Irish. So coming from Ireland and winning an event in a sprint hurdles was pretty unusual. So yeah, you've done way better than the media here for the past however many years. So good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. That was a crazy race for me in terms of the entire season, that indoor season. I had changed coach and I kept running faster every race. And I remember going to World Indoors and looking at the start list and thinking, somebody has to win. And right now there's nobody's name nailed on here. And I had no fear. Like it was probably the only race in my entire career that I was absolutely certain of the outcome. I felt like there was no way I was going to lose it. And it was only 0.02 seconds. And I just remember crossing the line being like, I'm pretty sure I got that, but I didn't want to celebrate just in case. I didn't want to be that person that goes bananas and doesn't win. Especially because I think it was such a shock win to so many people. But it was never a shock to me. And I remember I ran an Irish record in the heat, an Irish record in the semi-final, an Irish record in the final. And I honestly think I think it was Gloria Losey was second, Susanna Calore was third. If Glory had run like 7.82, I think I would have run 7.80. If she had run, like, I remember ringing my coach and being like, I feel like I still had a little bit in the tank, like that I was just able to maintain that bit of rhythm just ahead and just get to the line. And it felt like the calmest race of my entire career. And every race, I have to say, after that, like, and it took me 3 years to get back to that kind of level and shape. I had a lot of injuries after that. And no race ever felt as easy as winning that world title, which I think is kind of crazy, but true.
I feel you on that, because I felt the same way. When you know you're going to win, you have it with the hurdles, without stress and all that. You just know what's going to happen. And then, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen after. We just want to win one race at a time, because the next race is not guaranteed. The injuries, they come, they go. It's just, that's our sport, right? Whoever's the best at that moment on that night or that afternoon wins the race. The next race, especially in our event, could go to anybody. So
yeah. You're right.
You know, it's so competitive. Well, Sally, you managed to win the Olympics in 2012. And I'm just going to say, you broke somebody's Olympic record. And I'm not going to say who that person is, because I feel like that person is still a little bitter.
This is awkward.
Wishing you could have run just a little slower. No, but and the 2011 and 17 world champion outdoor, and the 2012 world indoor champion. And I'm wondering, you've always had this amazing start. I think that everyone that lines up against you knows you're going to get out. That's kind of what it is. So 2012 indoor wasn't a shock, I don't think, to anyone, but did, or maybe to you, but did that win indoor help you build confidence, propel you going into the outdoor season where you ultimately had such a fantastic year?
No, the reason why I did the world indoors is because I had never done one before. So I don't think it actually surprised me I don't think the world indoors helped me win outdoor season and then the Olympic Games. It was more the fact that I just wanted to try something different, see where my speed was at over the shorter distance. And just have some fun. I train to compete. And so for me, I just wanted to compete all year round. I think when you're in some of the best shape of your life, you just want to keep racing because it's fun and it's easy. Training is the hard part for me. Competing is where I thrive and where I really enjoy myself. And so sometimes to my detriment, I felt a little bit unbeatable, and I felt a little bit untouchable, and that was sometimes to my detriment. But in my good years, I was like, I just want to keep going and going and going and going. And that's kind of the year after winning the 2011 World Championships, I just wanted to keep going on that role. It was just a highlight and it was fun, and it was electric. The feeling that you get when you race, when you're in really good shape, is sometimes indescribable.
Yeah, definitely agree. So let's shift a little bit, ladies. We all have something in common, right? We're hurdlers, retired hurdlers, right? We're all retired. Sally, we good? You coming back?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
So, but we have something else in common. We are all now mothers. And for me, it's been amazing. It's been a journey. We joked earlier about it's, being a mother's harder than being an athlete, and sometimes you just want to go back to that instead. Just, like, you guys are driving me crazy, let me get out and go practice. But Gail, so your daughters are the oldest. You have Carson and Legacy. Tell us about them, and tell us how motherhood has changed you, if at all.
Well, it has, obviously. I always tell people, when I ran and I was an athlete, the word no was not in my vocabulary. And now, you know, I have kids. It's like, no, you can't go here. No, you can't have this. So that's become a regular that I say every day. But they're a joy. I tease and say that they're my platinum medals. I won gold medals in track and field, but my daughters are my platinum medals. And yeah. It's like I don't remember life without them, to be honest. Every day is a new challenge. You know, somebody will send me a picture and say, oh my gosh, who is this? I'm like, oh my gosh, they were so little, you know, and now I've got one in high school. She's in, sophomore in high school. And for her, that Carson, I always thought, I'm like, this child will never be an athlete because she's possibly the laziest child in America, you know. And last year she came and she was like, oh, you got to sign this paper. I'm like, for what? She's like, I'm going out for football and American football, but flag football for girls. I'm like, girl, go sit down somewhere. So, but she was serious, you know, and she went out, you know, because she's always been about just her academics. So they're a joy to watch. And Legacy is in, well, Carson's in 10th grade. Legacy is now 13 and she's in the 7th grade. You know, it's a little different now because they're at home, you know, with the pandemic and everything, they're not in school. So that is a little different for them because they don't get out as much as they would have if, you know, if it was normal circumstances. But being a mom, as you guys know, it's a joy every day. They grow up fast. So please pay attention to the little ones because you'll look up and you're like, oh my gosh, you're how old? Get out of here. But they're still your babies. They still, you know, come and sit in my lap and do the same things that they did. So it's, I love it. I mean, I love it. You know, Joanna, you got your girls and it's special.
Yeah, it's, excuse me, it is fun. It is a lot of work. Depending on the day, I'm like, I need to get out of here. I hide in the bathroom. I hide in the car. I'm like, where can I go where they can't find me? And there's nowhere. They will find you anywhere. Durval, so we've all got girls and you've got a girl and a boy. So your daughter's older. So what's the difference really in raising them? I know they're pretty young yet, but you know, up to now, what's been different for you with the boy and the girl?
Oh gosh, that's an interesting. So my son is almost two. He'll be two next month, and my daughter is five. And the big personality difference, but I don't know, is it firstborn versus secondborn? Is that he has no fear of anything, and he would follow his sister anywhere, do anything, climb on any surface. You know, like tonight we were looking at a space in my house where we need to put a net because he's climbing like crazy. So he is much wilder as a child. My daughter, it's really interesting, I think, being a mom to a girl, because I feel so strongly about women just like having their place in the world, being heard, being seen. And like, I'm all like, I think with her, I'm always kind of saying to her, you know, if you have something to say, stand up and say it. Let your voice be heard. You know, what do you have to say about this? And I think I'm always trying to empower her. And I don't want to use that word flippantly, but I think that's something, I feel like that's a big difference maybe between her and my son. I don't know because he's so small, but definitely with my daughter, I'm very conscious that, you know, for a girl, you do have to, I think, work harder in the world sometimes to get noticed and to get seen. And yeah, so I am all right. Like, she really believes right now she can do anything in the world, like absolutely anything. And like it's funny because she has no idea about me really as an athlete, because obviously she wasn't born, or that track was a big part of my life. And if people say to her randomly in Ireland, like, oh, God, your mummy was fast, she'll just look at them really seriously and she'll say, I'm faster. And she really,
oh my gosh, that's what Legacy did. Yes. Oh my gosh.
And she really, like, she believes it, and I just run with it. I'm like, okay, you know, you've got me. So track and field for me gave me this area that it just opened up the world to me as a woman. Like, it just gave me all these opportunities. And I feel like for her, it's really important to me, sports is up some part of her life in whatever way, shape, or form to make her feel good about herself.
That's amazing. Yeah, and that's what you're saying about empowering women is great, because we definitely want to talk all about that. And you are already on the right track with your daughter. And Sally, your daughter is the youngest. She's still just 7.5 months yet. But what is it like for you? This is, again, a big transition from life on the track, training every day, being all about you, right? Now you have to be all about someone else. So how's that going for you?
Well, to start off with, retirement was hard because I didn't want to retire. I still wanted to be an athlete, but my body decided that it was certainly time to stop. So that was a little hard to take, because the mind was willing, the rest of my body was willing except for my Achilles. So that was really, really hard to take. So I'm still adjusting to that and knowing that I'm not coming back to the sport that has given me so much and that I was so passionate about. But I suppose what's made it really, well, I know what has made it really easy is Ruby coming along. She has just been the best thing that's ever happened, or better than anything that I've done in athletics. So that's definitely made the transition really easy. It's funny though, when you say that all the attention, I suppose, was on me and everything was about me, because you're an athlete and you have to be selfish, you have to look after yourself. Everything that you do revolves around yourself and making sure that you can be the best athlete that you can be. And then that whole attention shifts to someone else, someone that you have to care about and look after 24/7, was a bit mind-blowing, really. I tell my husband, I'm not used to looking after someone else. Why isn't this about me anymore? It's certainly a huge learning curve for me, and probably the biggest learning curve that I've ever had, including athletics. I feel like when I'm listening to myself speak now, I feel like the most selfish person in the world. But it's just a transition that I've been making, and she makes every day so much brighter. She makes you so happy. And I guess whenever you see your child smile, it just melts your heart every single time. And that's what she certainly does for me and my husband as well. It's wonderful.
It is a transition. You are used to just being about you, and all of a sudden, you don't really get like a lead up to it. Like, okay, we're going to wean you off of being all about you. You know, we're going to give the baby to you 3 days a week. Right. And then we're going to take her, you know, we're going to every other day type of deal. No. This is yours. Keep her. And you are responsible for her. So good luck. No manual, no blueprint, no book, nothing.
I know that's right.
Like, wait, you.
When she came out, the first thing I thought was, oh my goodness, this is forever.
I can't give her back. She's. I wasn't ready. Can I get another couple of weeks with her in there? Why is she not yet?
What a redo.
What a redo. She's not done yet. Put her back. Like, I'm, it's so funny.
I'll tell you, that was me when Carson came out, she slept for like 10 hours. And they kept saying, are you breastfeeding? I'm like, she's fine. She's going home with me. If you're more sleepy than you are hungry, then you'll sleep. If you're more hungry than sleepy, you'll wake up. Okay, so I was good. And she was like that perfect child. Then that other one came. So when Legacy came, I was, you know how they take you over and you're supposed to be like in the recovery room. I was recovering, which means I'm supposed to be recovering. They bring her in. They're like, she's hungry. I'm like, your point?
Somebody feed her.
Exactly. I'm like, okay. So then I'm like, that set me up on a pattern because I fed her. And then from then on, it was like every 2 hours. I'm like, really? This chick is for real with me. No, I get it. And she's still the same way. So
And that's funny because all their personalities are different, right?
You have different.
Do this or do that. One's hungry, one's not. They're like, feed your baby every 2 hours, 10 minutes on one side. I'm going to let her finish and then I'll just decide what we're going to do. She's asleep. She's asleep. Exactly. I'm not waking her up. I'll survive. But they have all the books, right, and they have all the guides. And I think we read them to kind of get an idea or call our parents or our friends or whoever. But at the end of the day, the ultimate choice comes down to you, what you're comfortable doing and how you feel like your children are going to succeed and best, what's best for them. And it is a big, big responsibility because you're like, oh, I messed that up. Can't go back. Shoot. I hit that hurdle hard. That is not, oh, darn it. Not another race. Can't just get a new baby. Like this one I have to deal with, but which is funny because I mean, so we're raising these young girls, right? And Gail, you're already in this. You mentioned it earlier too, you know, Carson wants to play football and all these different things. And we're in a world, this 21st century of girls can do this, not that. You can't come here. You can't go there. You have to wear this. You have to look like that. With all these guidelines of how our young women are supposed to be, how are you instilling these, your characteristics, not the character, your values into your daughters and teaching them that, again, like Durville said earlier, you can be anything, you can do anything. What are some of the conversations that you're having with them?
Well, for us, since they were born, I mean, from very young age at nighttime, before they go to bed, we have girl talk. We kick daddy out, we have girl talk. And Yay. It's whatever's on your mind, you get to tell mommy. And some of the stuff, I'm like, really? Do I really mind your all this?
Right. Tell daddy, and tell daddy.
These conversations have changed as they've gotten older. But I love that. Like I tell them, out of everyone in the world, I've got your back. You know, mommy and daddy, we have your back and we want you to come to us if you have any questions. I mean, I don't want you going to your friends who are learning it as they're growing up too. You know, if it's not me, I've either been there, done that, or I know someone who's been there, done that. And so they come to me and we have what we call real talk. And it's awesome because it has graduated over the years as they get older. You know, my girls are 28 months apart. And so even from, you know, talking about menstrual and you're developing, you know, I remember when we first started having that conversation. Now, Legacy has this personality that whatever comes up, comes out. So we were having the conversation that, oh, Carson, you're starting to develop. She's like, well, so Legacy chimes in and she's like, well, mommy, based off of what you got, she don't have far to go. I'm like, really? So it's those kind of conversations.
So Derval, you mentioned earlier about your daughter. You're just telling her she can do anything. She already is faster than you. So that's good. How important is it going to be for sports, or is that going to be like you've got to run, you've got to play a sport, or you've got to, you know, do, if you want to be a poet, if you want to be a musician, like what are your thoughts and what are your like ideas for her? Where do you see your daughter?
I have to say with Gail and Sally, speaking, you know, talking like, first of all, it's Sally talking about that change to becoming a mother. I had that when Daphne was born, like, definitely it was all about me, and then all of a sudden I was there and I just want to go for a massage and have someone be really nice to me. I definitely experienced that as well. And then it's funny what Gail was saying about like girl talk. So we have a thing in my house with my daughter. I don't know how it happened where we decided we had girls club. So it's like the two of us are in girls club in our house, and she's so into girls club, like, and so she says to my husband all the time, she's like, girls club forever, and just stares at him. Like, and then she'll come and high five me. And in terms of sport and I want her to be joyful, but also you'd love to see that bit of bite in them, you know, because I think when I was competing, and that's something I miss now being retired, like the times in the races that it went well and the times I ran, you know, Irish records on big days, I had a lot of bite in me and I was ready to fight it out for something that really mattered to me. And you'd love to see a bit of that because that brought me joy. So I don't care what she does, like, so long as she gets joy from it and she kind of commits to it to be the best version of herself. But I won't lie, I would love it if it was track. I would love an excuse to be going to like track meets as a track mom. I think that would be unbelievable. But you know, we'll see. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, I think we all kind of have that in our head, like, it'd be so cool to see our little daughters, you know, running and racing and winning. But I think my daughters are playing tennis. Zoe loves track. So we'll see, you know, we'll just kind of see where they develop and what they love. I think it's really about what they love. And you kind of can see that as they grow, right? I think you know what they're good at. I always talk to athletes and like, well, why'd you choose that? I was good at it. Like, so whether it's something they love or if they're just good at it, I think we're just raising that way. And I know Sally, you said, you know, she's going to be an athlete, right? You can feel that in your daughter with her activeness already.
Yeah. And just, I think, she'll either be that or a trapeze artist. I think she loves to hang upside down. I sit at the cafe sometimes and all these mothers just stare at me because she just throws herself forward, hangs over my knees and just sits upside down. And they're just like, what are you doing to your daughter? I'm like, I'm not doing anything. She's doing it herself. So, she's a crazy one. She's definitely fearless, which I love because that's what I was like. I remember, well, I don't remember, but I was always told from family members and friends that I was fearless. I used to stand at the top of the stairwell and whoever would walk past, I would just leap out and yell out, catch me. And they just have to turn around whether they were ready or not and just catch me. So, I mean, that's one of the reasons why my mum put me into gymnastics when I was younger, because I was just fearless. And that was probably the sport at the time that could, I guess, allow me to be the person that I was. And I think she's certainly going to follow in my footsteps, but I hope that she does do athletics. I mean, I love my sport, but at the same time, tennis is quite big in Australia. And so I'm happy to throw a tennis racket into her hand and give her the opportunities that I didn't necessarily have when I was younger, because we simply couldn't afford it. Athletics was the cheapest sport going around as well. And it was the easiest one. All you needed, well, actually you didn't need it at a young age. You didn't need shoes. You didn't have to run in shoes when you're younger because we were all on grass and I didn't have shoes for a long time and it was just easy. But I loved it because I was super competitive And so I hope that she does do sport, because I love watching the little tackers running around, and especially, you know, when you watch little kids run on a track and they're from the 100 meter start line, but they follow the bend lines around and then they all end up jumbled up together. I love that. I think it's so cute. And I would love to see her getting out there and being a little athlete someday. It would be awesome. But at the same time, my husband's very musical as well, so if she could follow in that, in that path as well. She loves the sound of tapping and rhythm and music as well. So who knows? It's just listening to all of you and learning about just, I guess, letting them be who they want to be is really important as well.
No, that's, I think, yeah, that's amazing. I think we're all going to wake up one day and we're just going to be like, look at our daughters, look at our sons, look at our kids. They're so amazing. And I think, you know, you guys are amazing women. So your daughters and have these amazing role models to look up to. And when you, people have a dream, right, and they want to do all these things, and then if they don't, they tend to put that on their kids and they want to live through their children. And so you guys are lucky. You don't have to even do that. You can, you already, you've done everything. But I think it's still important to know that even the things that we haven't done, the things that we wanted to do, we can't force it on our kids, but they have to find their own path and they have to be individual, right? And they have to stand up for themselves and believe in themselves. And it's amazing that my daughters are now, when they saw Kamala Harris as the vice president of the United States, it's like, they'll randomly be like, well, when I'm going to run for president, or, and I'm just like, just randomly saying stuff like that. And I just think it's amazing, like where we're going. We obviously have a long way to go. Women, women in sports, just in general, our feminine women, we have a long way to go, but I think we're making great strides, and it's women like you who are absolutely helping lead the way. And so it's amazing what you guys have done on the track and still what you're doing off the track. And so I was thinking about, like, this year, 2021, right? The Tokyo Olympics. And we, I know we have a lot of memories about the Olympics that we were in. And so I wanted to kind of ask each of you, what is your either most favorite or most memorable or both moment from one of the Olympic Games you went to? And Gail, you were at the, you were there before all of us. So what do you, you have a lot to think about though. You have a lot to choose from. Yeah, no, you have a lot of games to choose from. Like how many, which one?
That's called old lady privileges. Okay. I'm going to say, well, won't say my first Olympic, my first Olympic gold medal, first of all, is memorable to me. More so, and that was in 92. My first Olympic Games was 1988, but my first gold medal was 1992. And it's memorable because I was known as a hurdler. But the irony of that is that my Olympic gold medals have come in the sprints or the relay. And so I always tell people, if you look in the Olympic book, you wouldn't know I ran the hurdles at all, because I was either not in the medal count. But world championships, yes. So memorable for me was my first one, and more so because of what I had gone through, my Graves' disease and coming back from that. I remember crawling, you know, just 17 months prior to the Olympic Games, wondering if I'd ever walk again. And then I, you know, my biggest thrill was running around, taking my victory lap and telling the cameraman to keep up, because, you know, you just don't know what I've gone through. And he was like, slow down, you're supposed to savor the moment. I'm like, you better keep it up. But so that was probably my most memorable. What I'm famous for is the Gail Devers fall. You can even Google that. And they say Gail Devers fall. So my fall over the Olympic hurdles. But what I took from the, you know, I never cried over that race. And what I took from it was that, you know, you start off a race and you have your goals and your dreams and your thoughts of what you're going to do. And my goal is always to finish the race, to get across the finish line. If I do my best, you know, of course you want to, you know, doing your best means, for me, it means giving my 100%. It may not be coming across the finish line in first place, but I'm a winner by my efforts. And people always look at me strange when I say that that race in 1992 at the Olympic Games and the hurdles, I was successful. And they're like, how can you be successful? You fail. I said, because I finished the race, first of all, and I did all that I could do on that day. It was not my time to win, obviously. I do believe in destiny and things happening for a reason. And it was, you know, if you look through history, the girl who won, that was the first time that Greek had won a medal, and she won a gold medal. And so what it did for me, I didn't win a gold medal, but it encouraged me and inspired me to come back. And I was able to say that I've gone to 5 Olympic Games, and there's not a lot of people who can say that. So I take everything in my life. I find something positive out of the, as my kids say, you find the best situation out of what somebody else thinks is the worst. And I said, and I do, because I live off of positive. So,
I mean, that's so amazing, Gail, because you're right. People can't understand how can you say that? You know, you fell down, you were supposed to win all these things, but they don't see it from your eyes and from your experience. And you've been through a lot prior to that. And yeah, you finished the, I mean, we've seen it. I'm sure both of you ladies have seen it. You're crawling, you know, across that line. You finished that race and you finished in 5th, right? So like you didn't even get last and you fell. So I think there's something to be said about that, right? You actually finished before some people in the race falling down. Right, so right. Yeah. And it's to each, it's, you are pretty incredible. I mean, I think we all know that. So Sally, what about you? What experience do you remember most?
The first part of my 2008 silver medal was even before I got to the Olympics. And I remember emailing my auntie who lives in England, because obviously we all need somewhere to stay when we go to Europe to do the circuit. And so I'd already been over to Europe and come home before the Olympics so I could prepare a little bit more. And then I went back over to Europe. But before I went over, I emailed my auntie to ask if I could stay with her while I did some competitions. And she said to me, "You can only stay here if you win an Olympic medal." And I was like, oh, okay.
No pressure.
Obviously being sarcastic. But then as soon as she said that, it was like, something just sort of lit a fire in me. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do that. And it was almost like what Derva was saying about her world indoors, is it was like it was guaranteed in my head. Like, I am going to do that. I know that I can do that. And I don't think I was even ranked in the top 5 at this stage going into the second phase of my European campaign. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it. And so that was a really interesting, growth period in my being an athlete. And I remember being at the Olympics, and I was so uncomfortable being there. I didn't enjoy the heat. I didn't enjoy the semifinals, but I was so excited for the finals. I remember the day before the final, after my semi, I was just cranky. I was really cranky. And I remember one of our veteran athletes in our team, she was a long jumper, and she just took me to the cafeteria for lunch. And I just said, "I don't know what I'm doing. I'm cranky. I don't want to be here. I don't know what's going on." She goes, what's going through your head?" I'm like, "I've got to race these girls. They're so fast. And how do I do this? Like, what do I have to do?" And she goes, "Have you raced these girls before?" And I said, "Well, yes, every time I've raced in Europe." And she goes, "Well, there you go." And she goes, and I said, "Okay, well, that's one point tick." And she said, "Have you beaten these girls before?" I said, "Well, yeah, mostly all the races that I've run so far." She goes, "Well, there you go. You know how to race them and you've beaten them before. So why is this any different?" I said, "Because it's the Olympic Games and it's the Olympic final. It's different. And it's got that word there, Olympics." And she goes, "Yes, but you know how to race, you know how to compete, and you know how to win. And so you just have to remember that when you go and step on that track in the final." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, that's easy enough." And that was another interesting turning point, being an athlete, that it doesn't matter who you're running against. You've raced them before, and that's what you have to remember. And so then I stood on the start line, and I just enjoyed it. I loved being there. I loved the moment. I don't even remember who was in the race at the time. I don't remember any of the girls who were on the outside lanes, because I think I was in lane 3, so I couldn't even see anyone over there. And I just enjoyed every moment of it. And one thing that I really remember that felt like a little bit of fate for me was I was setting up my blocks, and then I had this the front of the block, you know how there's a bit of a plate there sometimes? It was quite reflective, and there was a reflection of the Olympic flame on my blocks. And I looked down, I'm like, "Oh, this is fate. This means something to me. I just feel so at home now. I feel almost guaranteed that I'm going to get this medal, and I'm just going to do my best and get out fast." And I remember, so gun went off, and for the first 5 hurdles, I was winning the Olympic Games. And I distracted myself. And I was saying out loud, I felt like I was saying it, like, "Oh my God, I'm winning the Olympic Games." And I'm like, oh no, get that. And I was like, oh no, come on, focus, 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 focus. You're going to lose this if you don't. And then obviously Lolo Jones just went blitzing past me. And I'm like, it's okay, it's okay. You've still got this, you've still got this. And I'm running, I'm running. And then she, Lolo faltered. She tripped and went backwards. And I'm like, oh my goodness, focus, focus, focus. That's all I kept saying to myself. And then obviously Dawn Harper went past. Went over, finished, crossing the finish line, and I knew that I was in for a chance. I still knew I was in for a chance, and I had to look. So I kind of dipped, turned my head, and I'm like, whoa, I think I've got a medal here. I think I actually did what I said I was going to achieve at these Olympic Games. I think I've got silver. And then I think the most memorable moment for me was having that realization that my name came up on the scoreboard as a medalist. And that was something that felt like it was set in stone then. It was like, yeah, this means that I'm going to be in the Olympic history books forever. There's my name. This is what I've achieved. And I am super excited by this right now. And nothing can really tear me down. And that was probably my most memorable Olympic moment was Beijing.
I remember.
So, that's a long story too. There.
No, it's great because I'm just, as you're talking, like you're filling in some gaps for me because I remember the race. I had raced you earlier in the season and I knew, again, like you said, those first five, you were gone. And I watched the race unfold and, you know, as you said, how everything happened. But what was really memorable for me was what you just said, your reaction, your celebration. You were, I mean, it was amazing. It was just pure joy. Right. And just seeing that is what this sport, I think, is about. Yeah. It's winning is great. We all want to win. We want to do all these things and make money and all that. It's wonderful. But that pure joy, I think, is what keeps you going. And it's what draws other people to the sport.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it's about at the end of the day. Gail finishing a race, you know, you meddling like you said you were. But it's the process in which you get to the moments of the pure joy. So that was an amazing story. What about you, Daryl? Yeah. What were your favorite moments of your Olympics?
Both of my Olympic stories are connected to these two ladies' Olympic Games. So when Gail ran at the 92 Olympics in Barcelona, I will never forget it. I was in the front room in my parents' house, and we grew up like within an estate with all these other kids. And I could see all these kids out the window playing outside on the green. And normally I loved running and playing with all the kids. But for some reason this day, I could see this on television. And it was Gail's race. Like, and I just remember thinking I couldn't leave the room. Like, I had to stay watching her. And I don't know, like, you were just so iconic to me even at that age. I was like, I have to stay watching. I have to stay watching her. And I remember the race. I remember it so well. I was like 11. And I remember you finishing. That's what I remember about the race. I remember you kept trying. And I was there at my dad. And I remember saying, like, this is amazing. Like, could I go? Like, can you go to the Olympics? Like, is this a thing, you know? So that was my earliest memory of the Olympic Games. And it was honestly really, really impactful on me. Especially because I was only ever really seeing kind of a bit of distance running. I wasn't really seeing sprints or sprint, and I had just jumped a hurdle for the first time, and I just remember being like, this is outrageous. Like, this is, it's like, I just didn't know it existed till her race. It was unbelievable to me. It was so impressive, but just such an impact. And then with Sally in 2008, like, I went into the 2008 Olympics from a small country. I put so much pressure and stress on myself that, like, if I didn't win an Olympic medal, the whole entire country in my head would have been devastated. It was a disaster. Like, I put so much stress on myself, and I went there, and the whole year I tore my groin 4 weeks before the Olympics, couldn't cross a hurdle. First time I hurdled in 4 weeks was the heat of the Olympic Games, and it just all fell apart. And I remember sitting in the stand and seeing Sally's like pure joy and being so, so gutted for myself. And then I got on the plane on the way home and I sat next to this person who I didn't really know. He looked vaguely familiar. And I knew he wasn't from track. And I was like, I started to explain to him my devastation. I was like, I used to be good at, and now I'm actually terrible. I'm like, da, da, da. And he was so sensible, and he was stuck next to me on a plane for 10 hours. Imagine, like, what a disaster for him. Like, this girl who was about to start crying, he was just like, oh God. And he ended up getting off the plane, and he said, and I'll tell you why I know this. He said, God, I was next to this girl. He didn't stop talking for 10 hours, but I think she still really loves what she does, but she just has to figure it out. And the reason I know that that's what he said to his mom is because he's my husband. So I ended up marrying.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. So I ended up sitting next to the guy on the plane so he went to 2 Olympics for sailing. So he's an Olympic sailor. And like, I think if he came into my life and he made me find like why I loved the sport again. And I took from that moment on, from that plane journey, I swear I never felt pressure in track anymore. A few of the things just landed for me. I was like, it doesn't matter to anybody but me. And I let it go. Like, I just let it all go. And even someone in the Irish press said to me the other day, are you devastated you don't have an Olympic medal? I was like, look, I would love an Olympic medal. I would like love an Olympic medal in my house. But I had to find myself again. And I had gotten quite lost, I think, at that point in my career. So, yeah, definitely when Sally was celebrating, I was lost up in the stand trying to find myself. So I did find my way back to myself, and it definitely set me up for my life after track. I think I became a better person out of it, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. And I love the story about your husband. That's great. So it's like a lesson to everyone. Never shut up. Just keep talking. You might find your husband.
Eventually they'll marry you if you keep talking.
If you keep talking and they're like, what can I do to shut you up? Marry you? Cool. Will you stop marry me. Sally, I know you have to go. I wanted to, there's some more points I wanted to get to, but I wanted to get to this one. I think it's important. I wanted to ask, what advice do you have for young ladies, young girls coming up in the world of sport or and just life in general? What advice would you give to them?
I think Derval said it before, is to find your why as to what you're doing and why you're doing it. I've had to ask myself that question a few times in my career, and it just took me back to the reasons why I started sport and what I enjoyed about it. Because I think sometimes we can get a little bit, as Derval says, lost and into what you're doing. And the reason why I came back after missing the Rio Olympics from injury was I asked myself a few questions, and they were all like, they're just questions as into, do I still like the sport? I always loved the sport, but I didn't necessarily like it at sometimes. And I always thought, I asked myself, do I still want to do this sport? And the other questions were, if I come back into the sport, if I continue training, do I think I can win again? These are the sort of questions that I was asking myself. And I think sometimes you have to take a step back and have a bit of a realization and a reality check of what you're doing and why you're doing it. So I think it's more the advice that I would give people is just to remember why you start something. If you're finding yourself that you're lost, just go back in time and see yourself where you were when you first started. And that's usually the reason why you've started something.
Sally, thank you so much. I know you have to go. It's been a pleasure. And ladies, we're going to continue this amazing conversation that we're having. And I'm going to take it right to you, Derval. The same question that I just asked Sally about, you know, any advice that you have for the younger generation of young ladies coming up?
Great question. I think something that was really, really important in my career, particularly in an event like Women's Sprint Hurdles, was to let go of thinking about other people in the race, thinking about other competitors. I remember just hearing that quote at some stage during my career, like, comparison is the thief of joy. And I had to just focus on myself, because what was an amazing result for me might not necessarily have been amazing for someone else, and vice versa. And I think you have to think about your lane and what you're doing and what you want to do. Like, I remember coming fourth at a World Outdoor Championships, and it was the best probably performance of my career, because I was completely injured. I hadn't hurdled in the entire year, yet I came fourth and almost pulled off a medal in a year that I'd barely crossed a hurdle. And I knew what I had been through for that performance, and I knew how much it meant to me and my coach. And I think once I learned that it was all about what I wanted to achieve for myself in my lane, within my career, the sport was an amazing thing for me. And I think for young athletes coming up, at the end of the day, you go to a championship and how five or six hurdle heats, there's three people that stand on top of that podium. And yes, we all want to be one of those people on the podium, but not everybody will be. And I think you have to kind of go, what is success for me? What does that look like? And how can I be the best version of myself and not get disheartened in the sport? Because the sport is for everybody, and there's a place for everybody in the sport. And I think just concentrating on yourself and what you can carve out of it. And I look at track, and it opened up the world to me, but it wouldn't have if I had really just worried about what everybody else was doing. But because I worried so much about myself and being my best version, it just opened the world for me. So yeah, I think that's what I would say. Don't compare yourself.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Everyone's journey is their own, right?
Absolutely. And
just the bottom line, embrace your journey, because it doesn't even matter if you want someone else's, you're not going to get it. So you might as well be wasting your time, you know, worrying about it. Just stay focused, you know, stay on your own path. And Gail, what about you?
I'm probably going to amen what you guys have said. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, do you, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, that's all you can be is yourself. If you try to be someone else, but I will say, I always tell people to think about the consequences of your actions. Because if you do that, then half the things you thought about doing, you probably wouldn't do. And so that comes with setting goals for yourself. You know, I've come up in my house, they know I'm like, oh, I'm just telling everybody to live the Gail Force way. And they're like, what does that mean? It means focus on respect, commitment, and excellence. And you're respecting first yourself. If you respect yourself, you respect others. You're committed to something. I don't care what it is, you're committed to something. And be the best at that you can be. All you can give is your 100%. And so I say, do that and give it a little oomph, and that will take you over. And then excellence is defined by you. It's not defined by anyone else. It's what you set your goals, like you just said. You know, you can only, everybody might want to be on top, but everybody can be a winner by your actions and by the, you know, the accomplishments that you do for yourself, those goals that you set for yourself. And when I set a goal, I sign it, because it's like I'm signing a contract with myself to say that I'm willing to do all that I can do for as long as I have to do it. And at the end of the day, I go back and I look at myself in the mirror. And no matter what the task is, you can tell somebody else that something's going on, but you know the truth yourself. So if I say, did I do everything that I could do? And the answer is yes, then I'm successful, because it's defined by me. Now, if the answer is no, then you know you got to work.
You got some work to do, right?
Right.
And you have to answer, like that mirror. I mean, I'm always thinking about that too. You have to answer to yourself.
Yeah.
Can you look at yourself in the mirror and say, like you said, I did everything, or I didn't do, or I'm proud of myself, I'm not proud of myself? How? Because I told an athlete the other day, you are the only person that's with you 24 hours a day. It's you. So what other people think or say, that's going to come and go. But what do you believe? What do you feel about yourself? Because you're the one that matters the most. If you don't like what you see in the mirror, you don't like that person, then you got to find a way to make the adjustments to change it. Bottom line. So that's amazing, ladies. And I hope that people listening are really taking advice here and taking heed to all of what, you know, what we're saying here. I wanted to shift, because this is the fun part. So we're hurdlers. We've all been there. We've competed for many, many years. And now we're spectators, right? In some cases, coaches, but not of these women. We are about to watch some amazing women embark in Tokyo. It's been a while. It's been a long time coming. We're like, please, Tokyo happen, right? This COVID just messed everything up. But like, have you guys been like, ladies been watching? Like, do you guys have any thoughts? I mean, we've got the world record holder. We've got the reigning Olympic champion. Like, what do we think? What do you guys think? Like, what are your thoughts on the women going into Tokyo?
I think we're going to dominate. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's like you said before, it's the hurdles. And I think my philosophy was always, you're only as good as your last race. And I think these ladies understand that anybody could win on any given day. And we're so deep in our greatness. I'll just say it that way. We're so deep in our greatness that you just don't know. And it's not just in the United States, it's everywhere. So you don't know what's going to happen, but I think it's going to be awesome just to watch. And like I said, I love being a fan now. I love sitting in the stands. I said it before, when I'm 65, I'm not there yet. Hold on. But when I'm 65, I want to be able to sit in the stands and watch great competition. So to watch it now and to see what these ladies are doing and the efforts that they're putting, you see them hopping in the sprints, working on their speed work, and then you see that translating into their races. It's unbelievable. I can't pick a favorite. All I look for is that person that just, they gut it out to the very end, because the race is not over until you get across the finish line. So I'm excited to see what's going on. I love now that there's some track and field on television now, just to, you know, get us back into that mode. And I'm excited and I can't wait.
Amazing. What are your thoughts, Dervo?
I'm like you two ladies in that I'm such a massive fan of the event and the way the women just bring it in the sprint hurdles. Like, I was in the stand in Doha when Nia Ali won. I was commentating and I was just blown away by Nia. Like, I was there because I would have known Nia towards the end of my career. I could see her two kids down in front of me, and then she's becoming world champion. I just thought it was ridiculously inspirational. So I think you have like people in the event like Nia Ali, then you have, you know, Tiffany Porter, who's had a baby, who's come back, and she seems to be getting close to the form of her life. Indoors, she's going really well. So that's really good for Team GB. You have a couple of European girls. And then obviously, like you ladies know, the Americans just bring it at a different level. So I would love, I have a fierce soft spot for Kenny Harrison. I would love to see her do something. You can't call it. Like, I wish I could, but I think it will be ferocious, the race, and it's just going to be so good. I think it's like amazing that I think when you've been in it, you know how hard it is, and you know what it takes to run those times. Like, you know what it takes to get to the start line, to put it all together, to get to the finish. So whoever does that, you just are like, hats off, you're an incredible woman. So I'm excited. I love being a spectator now, I have to say. I like being a fan. It's fun.
Yeah, because those nerves are gone.
Yeah, I don't have to warm up.
You know, it's like, it's the hurdles, you have 17 competitors, right? You have 10 hurdles and 7 women, in some cases, 8, you know, 18 competitors, 9 women together. But it's like, you have to, again, stay in your lane and focus on those 10 obstacles. But these women on this either side of you, they're not trying to let you do that. Like, they're like, I'm coming for you, you know? And I think, Gail, you know this. We've talked about this for years, that the Olympic trials in America is sometimes harder than the Olympic Games, right? Like, oh, I made the team. Oh, thank God. Okay. Right. Okay. Okay. You know, no, now I can have some fun. They're just all over the place, and anything can happen. Like you said, Dervo, like, again, one of those 10 competitors somehow becomes 36 inches, and now you hit the hurdle, you know, like, what happened? And it's just, it's amazing to see the work that's put in, the focus that it takes to run full speed at 10 barriers against other people. That's not even, I mean, I don't know if anybody's run for the police, but I think it's more stressful.
I'm sorry.
It's good analogy, more stressful though. Than very good analogy. It's, you know? But yeah, I am excited. I can't wait. No sense, right? Like, and they say hurdlers have to be a little bit or a lot crazy, right? It's, you're nuts. Like, something is loose in here for you to just do that. And so, again, for us to have done it for all these years and just to have been successful on our terms, especially on our terms, is most important, has just been fun. So yeah, I'm with you guys, ladies. I can't wait. I'll make my predictions after the, after the teams are set, I'll start thinking about my predictions. Like, yeah.
After the trials? Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I have a question for you then. How did you go from the 400 meter hurdles down to the 100? You know, we're going to turn this around.
I love the questions for Joanna. This well, is brilliant, Gail. Good job.
See, exactly.
This is not in my script.
I'm so sorry we messed you up.
But, well, it's funny because I ran the 100 hurdles. I started hurdling my junior year in high school. And I did them both, 100 hurdles, and we did 300 hurdles. And so I would love the 100 hurdles first. It's just, I got to college, you know, so Gail and I were coached by the same coach. And so I got there, and Bobby, I remember just going into my freshman year in college, I ran the 100 meter hurdles and the 400 meter hurdles at junior nationals to make the Pan Am team. And I just killed the 100-meter hurdles. I was like, yes, we're in there, 1306, you know, this is amazing. And I'm like, I got another race, who cares? You know, that kind of thing. But I went to get drug tested and I spilled my pee. So I was in drug testing for hours, not knowing I didn't have to go until after. So I didn't even warm up for the next race. It was just a disaster. I went out, didn't even care, got killed. And, you know, and I feel like somebody would say, we feel bad for you. Bobby wasn't even my coach yet. It was like, ah, you go, you, when you get to UCLA, you'll be running like that. You're going to run them 400. Like, I was like, oh, did I make the one? This guy's crazy, you know. But I got to UCLA and all I wanted to do was run 100-meter hurdles. And I remember Gail, Bobby said it was after my freshman year, I'd got first in 100 hurdles and second in the 400 hurdles. And I'd run like 58.3. It was like 58.32. And he was like, that's not, you know, you would have run these 100 hurdles and that's not good enough. And the whole thing, he said, if you don't start giving me the effort that I demand in the 400 hurdles, you will never run the 100 hurdles again. I said,
that'll do it.
Right? I was like, this dude is crazy. So the next year, I won everything, both hurdles, 56. Oh, you know, I was like killing it. But so what happened was I had to balance out my training. I love training for the 400 hurdles. I didn't love competing. So I had to balance that out and really try to give some effort. But what ended up happening, making teams, the 400 hurdles were first. And they would just always kind of mess up my rhythm. Like the 400 hurdles and the 100 hurdles are not really comparable. You know, it's a very, you know, we're talking about a lap and we're talking about 100 meters, right? So it kind of messed up my rhythm. I didn't handle it really well, but the 400 hurdles started taking precedence. And in 2004, I just was like, I'm getting real tired of this. Like, I got fourth in 2000. I was like, Bobby, I'm not doing both anymore. And I'm doing the 100 hurdles and you can't tell me that I can't. I kind of had one of those come to Jesus with Bobby Gale. And I was like, he's going to kill me or I'm going to run the 100 hurdles. But either way, I'm not running 400 hurdles. So I'm going to be dead or I'll be running 100 hurdles. And that's really how it happened. I just said, I'm done. And Bobby was like, okay, I was 27 by then. He was like, fine. And I just said, I'm going to go. And kind of like you, Derval, from 06, I was like, I feel this in my gut. This is for me. This is my time. I want to do this. And I don't know if you remember, Gail, but after the team in 2004, you, me, and Melissa were in a press conference and somebody asked me, they were like, this is your first team. You know, they were like, Gail and Melissa are the veterans and this, you know, this is your first team. Are you just going there to get an experience? I was like, I'm 27. I'm going there and win just like them. Like this
exactly.
And from that moment, I was like, I'm going there for a reason, for a goal. And you know, training with Gail all those years with you, it was just like inevitable for me to get better. Like I'm chasing after one of the greatest ever, right? We're talking to a goat and I got to chase after her. You don't really have a choice but to get better when you're training with better people. And I tell athletes, don't shy away from people who are better than you. Go to those people, train with them, because you don't get better by yourself. Iron sharpens iron. So if you're winning every rep and you're just killing people in practice, well, how do you get better? You don't know how good you can be if you're always in the front. So for me, it's that training partners and just having people to pull me and inspire me. So yeah, that's really how it happened. Always been a doubler, but I got tired of the double. So
no, that's good. I always wanted to ask you that.
I want to know, right? Because I saw you on the track coaching in Doha, and I want to know, like, what type of coach are you? Because I'm not sure I would be a very good coach. So like, and you look pretty together when I saw you. So I was like, she looks calm. She looks together. Like, I think I would be a far worse coach. Like, I think I would be panicky. Like, I would be too worried about my athletes. But what are you like as a coach?
I mean, I think it depends. I mean, I'm pretty even keel. I'm one of those, I don't like to be upset. I don't like to yell and scream. Like, I'm opposite of Bobby. But my athletes always knew, like, if I yell, if I'm mad, they did something. Like, they really, really upset me. So I'm pretty calm. I like to have fun. I like to get the work done and work hard and tell them like, hey, if you want this, you got to work here. Pretty much that. Work hard and set your goals and don't, again, like we talked about, stay on the path. I did everything to win. I it took a long time, right? But you have to stay the course and you have to be patient and you have to understand the process. And so I'm with that, like that with my athletes. And so, yeah, but so I think, Dervil, to your point of like being calm, I think, because when I was an athlete, I was nervous Nancy. Like I was like, oh God, I'm just, you know, breathe through this, you know, with my athletes. I tell them nerves are okay. If you're not nervous at some point, you don't, you know, you want to win. You're nervous. You're nervous because you want to do well and win. There's a balance between being nervous and being scared. If you get scared and or you let those nerves paralyze you, now we've taken it too far. So there's that good nervous energy. And so the reserve, the rest of that, when you're about to go over the edge, I need you to give that to me. I take it on for them because I can be nervous and still coach you without you knowing I'm nervous. Right? Because I can't let you see that I'm nervous, right? Because I know you are. So I'll take that nervous energy from you and I'll just talk you through it and say, hey, you know what? We're going to execute. You've got this. And, you know, and again, each athlete is different. Some athletes I pray with, right? We have a prayer before we go. Some athletes, you have to just kind of meditate, relax them. Some of you like, let's go, let's go. You get them hyped, right? So I think at the end of the day, it's about learning your athletes and knowing them and what helps them get to the line. And that's really all it is for me. But yeah, I look cool and calm and collected, but it's in there. But you know, when they go away, you guys, there's nothing you can do at that point.
Right. You've already done your coaching.
You've done your job. So
get out there and execute.
Yeah. Right. You can be nervous. And if you have more than one, and I've seen my coach go through it. One of us makes a team, the other doesn't. Someone falls down, the other one wins. And you have to take your happiness and joy. You got to give Gail a hug. Oh, Gail, that was great. Oh, boom, boom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then turn around, Dervil. I'm so sorry. Hey, we're going to get this next time. But you have to be in an instant able to switch off the emotions. And that's really what it's about. So I think it's just, you just learn your athletes and you got to know what they need. And it's for me, it's I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. It's comforting for me and I love it.
Okay. Very interesting. Cause I was very curious that cause from seeing you in 04-05 and then to seeing you in a completely different role, it was very interesting to me.
So I'm going to ask you guys something. Well, I do want to say if Sally was here, then we would be talking about. So Gail and Sally, you both made these like contributions to the Museum of World Athletics. And so really, Gail, like what? How important is the heritage of athletics, of our sport to you?
Oh, it's very important. I think, you know, I stand on the shoulders of those who came before me. So to be able to put something in the museum that is there forever, you know, it means a lot to me, first of all, to have been asked to do it. And I was more than willing to do it. That's something that, you know, we've got kids now. So eventually we'll be able to take our kids and show them that this was a part of history that mommy was a part of, you know, whether they decide to do sports or not. It's still, I think like Sally said, when you get your name cemented in history, it means a lot. And so it was a big thrill for me. And I love doing it. And I can't wait for it to open and can't wait to take my kids so that they can actually see it and be a part of it too.
We are all four of us are ambassadors for the sport, right? And so I feel like with an ambassadorship, we're athletes, right? So we go, we do a job, we run, we compete, and we do all those things and we travel the world. But as ambassadors, I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a different responsibility. Like what, Dervil, how has been an ambassador for World Athletics been for you?
I suppose I felt in the women's sprint hurdles, I felt like I was kind of carving out a different path because like, it's funny, you're talking about 400 hurdles. I remember being a young kid and going to coaching clinics and telling coaches like, I want to be a world-class sprint hurdler. And them saying, no, like you're not that fast. You're not that da da da. So for me, I always feel like my job is to kind of show that, you know what, on your day, you can really show up and you can really back yourself and you can create these great opportunities for yourself. And I feel like I'm very proud that the sport I'm from is track and field because I think it gives so many opportunities to so many people, so many women. So I always, yeah, I think as an ambassador, like I do hope that I show that, you know what, there's always room for a bit of a wild card and you just never know what's going to happen. And I think you should just punt on yourself a little bit and go out there and take your chances.
Yeah, Gail, same for you. How has been an ambassador for the World Athletics been for you?
For me, you know, being an ambassador for me is it's a dream come true, to be honest, because I'm able to give back to the sport that gave me so much, you know, and to, you know, it's not just in the United States, it's worldwide, you know, from what the goals and dreams that we set for ourselves, and to be able to go out there and be a mouthpiece to show people what our sport is about, to have that pride, to have, you know, World Athletics on our chest, to be able to open our mouths and be the mouthpiece to say that this is a sport that opened doors for us. And then what we're supposed to do is continue. You know, when somebody opens a door for you, you're supposed to put your foot in it or something to bring somebody else along with you. And World Athletics has allowed for us to do that. You look at from every level, you know, going to like being in Doha and, you know, putting on little clinics for the little kids, starting them off. I was so excited about the little hurdles that they had out there. I was like, oh, no, these are cute. I need these back in the States, because they were like made out of some crazy stuff. But it's giving back. I mean, it truly is. They allow for us to give back and also to just, I mean, I say it all the time, be the mouthpiece. Be the mouthpiece of a sport that has made a difference. Like you said, track and field is probably the cheapest sport to be in and to be involved in, you know, but what you learn from being involved in track and field is what's going to take you to any arena in life. It's that never give up attitude. It's that everything's not going to be roses all the time. And what's going to happen to you when you feel like the walls are closing in on you and there's no way out? You have to find a way to pick yourself back up. You know, you go through the ups and the downs, but that's what makes you and builds your character and turns you into the person that you are. And you take that to any arena in life and you are successful.
Absolutely. Athletics is the foundation to really anything that we do in life. It's been an amazing experience to be involved in, from youth all the way to professional athletes. And it's changed. I think it's changed all of our lives, and it's changed so many lives around the world. So it's just amazing. And I'm also so really grateful to have been able to be a part of it for so many years, and to, yeah, share the stories and spend time with the youth and encourage them, because they're not all going to be Olympic gold medalists, but they're all going to participate, and they're all going to be something great. And they're going to take the lessons that we teach them, that they've seen us go through, and they're going to build on that. So, it's just been amazing for me as well. And so we have talked about a lot of this. This is like our last thing. We've held you guys forever, and we've touched here and there about what we're doing now, right? What you guys are doing now, but Durva, what exactly are you doing now? Like, I know we know you're a mother and a wife, but what else are you doing?
Oh gosh. So I have a healthy lifestyle business, over here in Ireland, where I have like an online business where I work with loads of different people, trainers, there's some psychologists on there, nutritionists, and we basically create healthy lifestyle content for people who just want to be a little bit healthier. So that's my day-to-day life, is working on that. There's over 9,000 women joined with me on there. So it's a very busy, very positive space. We're just like supporting women who just like kind of are like us, are really busy moms a lot of the time, and they just want a little bit of time for themselves. So yeah, I've kind of gone into that. And then I spend a little bit of time in the world to track more media wise. John, I'm not like you, like I haven't started coaching, but I think when my kids are a little bit older, I do like the idea of starting to get back into track and maybe doing a little bit of coaching then. But I'm certainly enjoying life on the other side. It is a lot of fun, you know. And I think for me, you know, over here in Ireland, like being an athlete, like put me on the map here, because it gave me such a big platform to be able to build this business once I retired. So yeah, that's my life outside of it.
Well, girl, I've known you a very long time, and I've never known you to sit still. You're always doing something. So what are you doing these days? I'm sure it's many, many things, but give us a few.
So I have been working with a friend who has a nonprofit. And with the pandemic, what we've been doing is serving frontliners and healthcare workers. So we've hit over 20,000 people that we've either served or provided PPE, stuff like that. So that's the one hand. I mentor athletes on the other hand. And whether they be either mentoring and coaching from football players to, you know, kids coming out of college, getting ready for the combine in football. And then I've recently studying to get my life license because I just think everybody needs to have life insurance. And I'm studying for my security so I can teach them to invest because I think these athletes, we need to make sure that they are where they are and they need to secure their lives. So I got all kinds of stuff. And then I got kids. So I'm running around from different sports and all the other stuff that everybody else is doing. I got two dogs, a rabbit. And so I got tons of stuff that I keep doing.
Again, like I said, Gail is doing a ton of things. Well, that's amazing. Both of you guys are doing some amazing things. And I think Sally is part of Sports Australia. So she's doing a lot. And obviously having an infant is a ton of work for her. And so that's why she had to leave early. I'm sure with something going on. She's got a lot going on. So I think that it's just amazing that you all have been able to grow in the sport and out of the sport. And I think that, again, when you get women hurdlers together, we do this. Like, this is what we do. We can multitask, right? We can run fast and jump over things. So that is our life now. And I think that I'm glad that I was able to do this with you guys, with you ladies. It's been such a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to be able to just do things with World Athletics. And you put powerful women together in a room and they're going to come up with powerful things and powerful statements. So again, I thank you guys, ladies, for your time, for taking the time out to talk with me, with each other, and to just have this fun little podcast. And so I wish both of you and Sally the best in all the endeavors that are coming forth. And obviously with the little ones, as we watch our children grow and take part in wherever their life is going to take them. I know that we are already proud of them and will continue to be. And yeah, maybe one day we'll be watching our little girls out there racing each other and our boys racing each other and in track meets and be like, they're our kids. You know, we'll be in the stands, Gail eating popcorn, watching the track meets. We're predicting who are the winners going to be. But ladies, until next time, it has been a pleasure. So great to see your faces. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day or night. I think you're at nighttime, Rebel. So enjoy.
Nighttime. I'm ready for bed, ladies. That was a lovely chat. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having us. I enjoy it.
It's been a pleasure. Bye.